Under the Golden Dome is supported by the Iowa Bankers Association. Bankers across Iowa are ready to help Iowans reach their financial goals to get them where they want to go. Learn about the difference of Iowa banks by following Iowa Bankers on Facebook and Twitter.
From Iowa Public Radio News, this is Under the Golden Dome, a weekly legislative podcast. I'm John Pimble. In the House of Representatives Lounge, several subcommittees meet at the same time. It's a noisy space.
This is a bill brought to us by Representative Hanusa.
At a small table, Republican Representative Mike Sexton chairs a three-member panel to discuss House File 139. It would stop a candidate from running as an independent in a general election if they lose the Democratic or Republican primary.
It's been dubbed the sore loser bill. So with that, I would open it up to anyone pro or against.
Democratic Representative Bruce Hunter wants to know why this bill is necessary.
And I don't think there's anybody here that can answer the question, but what problem are we trying to solve here?
I think, visiting with Representative Hanusa, the problem being that the person that lost the primary then ends up running, dividing their vote, Representative Hunter. As best I understand, that would be my interpretation of why she's introduced this legislation.
It just seems to me that maybe erring on the side of democracy is, I think, more important than, because it could happen to any one of us. And even if it would happen to me, I would think that if somebody loses a primary and decides to run as an independent or whatever, we should let them, I guess. I understand that it's going to be splitting votes possibly and create a problem for the candidate, whoever that is. But I think the right for anybody that's qualified to run for an office, I think trumps that.
Republican Representative Dave Dio says one way to eliminate the situation, make the deadlines for filing paperwork the same date.
It didn't really make sense that we have two different deadlines, you know. Essentially, we've got a deadline for the party candidates in the spring, and then a deadline for the independents and libertarians and other groups in August, essentially. And so I'm wondering if there's a way this could be changed in a way to make those dates line up the same. And then that would sort of eliminate the problem, you know, where people would have a second chance.
I think there may be another bill
coming along that does that. So that's
Representative Dio is correct. Another bill is coming to a subcommittee that would essentially make the bill they are discussing right now a bit redundant. Under current law, the process of becoming a legislator for the 2020 general election will work like this. There is a primary in June for parties recognized by the state, which right now is only Democrats and Republicans. To be in that primary, nomination papers have to be filed with the Secretary of State in March of that year. If someone wants to run as a non-party political organization candidate, like an independent, their nomination papers aren't due until August. Representative Dio is willing to sign off on this bill.
I'd be willing to sign on to this to keep it moving, just keep the discussion going, but I think it might be something else for us to consider that might be a better option.
Yeah. Representative Mike Sexton agrees.
The chair will be willing to sign to, as Representative Dio said, move along, keep the bill moving forward. We do have another piece of legislation, I think, that really does tie into this. So with that, I will bring this subcommittee to a close.
Representative Hunter does not sign on. 2 days later, the bill Representative Dio thinks would be a better solution comes before a House subcommittee. He isn't on this panel, but both Hunter and Sexton are.
Non-party candidates will have to meet the same filing deadlines as the Republican and Democratic parties. So with that, I would ask anybody that would like to make comment, if they want to do that, that would be great at this time.
People from the Secretary of State and the Iowa State Association of County Auditors are here, but they don't weigh in. They say they are here to monitor the bill. As Representative Hunter speaks, he is skeptical of this proposal.
Again, I guess I'd ask the same things I asked the last one. What problem are we trying to solve here?
I'm running the bill, Representative Hunter. I guess it's, I would, without talking to Representative Hanusa.
Both of these bills are authored by Republican Representative Mary Ann Hanusa, who is not attending these subcommittees.
I would guess it is a question of fairness, why we would have to file so early while non-party have till the middle of August to file their papers.
I'll tell you why it's happening, because we nominate our candidates in a primary. Most non-party parties nominate their candidates in a convention that happens during the summer.
The primaries for Democrats and Republicans are usually in June, followed by a party convention. If there is a problem after that, like, say, a candidate drops out, there is a nominating convention to put forth a new candidate.
Is it a hardship for us to have a primary in August instead of June? We could move our filing dates down to where theirs are.
Then we would campaign all summer long. I don't know if people
want to. Anyway.
Well, not we would be
campaigning now.
We would be running a primary as well as a general election, in my opinion. But
the bill is only for elections in even-numbered years.
I would. I'll close this subcommittee. I will sign the bill. And offer any other representatives to sign at this time.
In addition to Sexton, new Representative Joe Mitchell also signs. Representative Hunter begins to walk away from the table.
I guess I would take it that you are not willing to sign.
I don't think so.
Okay. Thank you for coming to the subcommittee, Representative.
Most bills brought before subcommittees tend to advance because they are proposed by Republicans who are controlling the House and Senate. But sometimes bills do not make it past the subcommittee. Two Senate bills about expanding vaccination exemptions fail to move forward. It's a controversial issue. More people than usual show up to this Senate Human Resources Subcommittee meeting. Around 130 people are in this tight space, including several children. Republican Senator Tom Green chairs this three-member panel.
This is an act providing for exemptions from immunization for a person's enrollment in any elementary or secondary school or licensed child care center.
Right now, there is a religious exemption for vaccinating a school child. All a parent has to do is fill out a one-page form from the Iowa Department of Health and claim immunization conflicts with a genuine and sincere religious belief. A person can also claim a medical exemption, but that form has to be signed by a doctor or a nurse. This bill would allow for vaccination exemptions if a family has a conscientiously held belief against having their child immunized. Pediatric Dr. Nathan Boonstra opposes this bill to make immunization exemptions easier.
When it's easier to get exemptions, then exemption rates go up and vaccination rates go down. And when we see that, there's a pretty much 1 + 1 = 2 direct link to having more vaccine-preventable diseases. Now we have largish outbreaks of measles in the Northeast. We have measles in the Pacific Northwest. We don't really want to put out a welcome sign for measles to the Midwest if we can help it. There's measles already, smaller outbreaks in Illinois and other areas around the country. So anything that we can do to avoid that is very important. In part because there are medically vulnerable children and children who can't be vaccinated that are among us, that go to schools that I take care of. And these children deserve to be able to be in the safest environment possible, both out and about, and also when they're being educated in our schools.
Informed Choice Iowa is an organization formed in 2017 to oppose mandatory vaccinations. Many members of this group are here to support the bill, including Lindsay Marr. Marr cites the bill's conscientiously held beliefs section, also known as a philosophical exemption. She says if Iowa has a philosophical exemption, there won't necessarily be a rise in disease.
If we compare states, Arkansas and Oklahoma, relative population size is the same as Iowa. They have a philosophical exemption, and their total exemption rates are equal to or slightly less than Iowa's. When Arkansas added their philosophical exemption in 2003, according to the morbidity and mortality report issued by the CDC in August of that year, they actually did see a rise in exemptions. However, their MMR, DTaP, all of their core vaccines needed to enter school did not go down. They have actually increased since then. So we have an additional philosophical exemption in those states, but we don't have a decrease in all vaccines, especially the main ones that we've had around for a long time.
An MMR vaccination is for measles, mumps, and rubella, and a DTaP or DTaP develops immunity to diphtheria, tetanus, and whooping cough. A board member for Informed Choice Iowa, Bree Johnson, says the philosophical exemption allows people to choose what kinds of vaccinations they can refuse for themselves or their children.
Exemptions are crucial with the amount of injuries that are being reported and the lack of liability, as well as tracking for these injuries that do occur.
Bethany Steichen says her 6-year-old suffered an injury after he was vaccinated when he was 2 months old. She holds up a picture of him after he received his shot where his face appears bloated.
His reaction was never put into his medical records. His doctor denied that it was a reaction in general, which isn't her choice to decide. According to the federal government, anything after that happens after a vaccine should be reported to VAERS, but it wasn't.
VAERS is short for Vaccine Adverse Events Reporting System. During this subcommittee, two bills about vaccination exemptions are discussed back-to-back. The second bill would prohibit discrimination or termination of a healthcare professional for not being fully immunized. It also says a patient has to be treated even if they aren't fully immunized. It also won't allow insurance companies to deny coverage for people not fully immunized. Most speaking about these bills use similar arguments for or against following the Centers for Disease Control vaccination schedule. President of Informed Choice Iowa, Shanda Burke, holds a thick binder of what she says are VAERS Iowa vaccine injury reports from last year.
This is a real issue. This is real Iowans being hurt. These are your neighbors, your friends, your family, and they deserve a right to choice, no matter where it's at, with who CDC is a doctor, where they work. No other healthcare issue is regulated like this.
Dr. Nathan Boonstra says the VAERS reports Burke is holding up are not vaccine injury reports.
They are reports of things that happen after a vaccine. If you go to VAERS website and you actually, pull up whatever you did to print that out, you'll see that it makes you check a disclaimer that says that you recognize that the reports that are in VAERS are not necessarily shown to be caused by a vaccine. And in fact, if you look at studies on VAERS, you find that, number one, most of them are for relatively minor things like fevers, that they're not for serious events. Number two, that many of them are found not to be caused by the vaccine. In fact, a recent study within the last 5 or so years, found that only a minority of them are found to be possibly caused by vaccines, and only 3% of them are found to be definitely from vaccines. And that the underreporting is largely because a lot of minor events don't go reported. More significant events are far better reported to VAERS than minor events like fever or rash. So trying to imply that that is a list of vaccine injuries just isn't accurate.
Lindsay Marr from Informed Choice Iowa says too many vaccines haven't been properly tested and worries about long-term effects.
So we have very big gaps in our safety data. We need proper safety data before we can tell people that this is a product they have to have, they must have. But right now, we don't have that. And so we need people, the most important part of this bill, in my opinion, to issue VAERS reports. However, a lot of doctors are not trained on it, or they don't want to record that. Even though, as Dr. Boonstra said, it is not necessarily a vaccine injury. You're just supposed to report the symptom or the adverse event, but they're not.
Megan Wisner says people in her family that have received vaccinations developed allergies.
It's been a fiasco trying to find a doctor that is willing to consider our unique needs as a family and respect my wishes as a parent. When my son reacted to his vaccines, no one took my concerns seriously. Ultimately, I alone am responsible for them. It's been so hard for me to find a physician. I still have not been able to find one. To see my kids or myself since we decided to stop following the recommended CDC vaccination schedule.
Family physician Dr. Kate Linkenmeyer says when considering these bills allowing for more vaccine exemptions, she's reminded of bad cases she has witnessed.
I watched a 15-year-old child slowly die in front of me because of influenza. And I know that people demonize docs and think that it's coming from some horrible place, like we're trying to make money off of these vaccines or we're only looking at statistics and number. But every single physician has stories, countless stories where they've watched young children die and they have patients that come in that can't get their vaccines. And knowing that we can't do anything to help patients and prevent their disease because of philosophical exemptions, I guess I'm trying to say is, as an Iowan wanting to help Iowans, this bill could have devastating repercussions. And it's not coming from a place of not believing others or not hearing their stories or not being sympathetic to their stories. It's knowing that we've all seen it and it's heartbreaking, and you don't come back from that watching someone die from these preventable diseases.
Republican Senator Jim Carlin is on the panel for both bills. He is the only one to sign these bills to move forward. Senator Carlin, who, like the rest of the panelists, is over the age of 50. He says the vaccines they received as kids work, but he questions why more vaccines are now required before a person is 18 by the Centers for Disease Control compared to when he was younger.
And we have factual data of adverse outcomes to merit further inquiry. The people in this room are here for a reason. And, you know, if they're that passionate about their cause, and there's enough instances of bad outcomes, this merits further conversation.
The chair of these subcommittees, Senator Tom Green, a retired pharmacist, says he is not going to sign off on these bills.
I firmly believe one of the things I was taught from an early age on in my pharmaceutical training was that the vaccines overall are the most significant positive public health issue that we have benefited from over the last 150 years. And I do agree with that perspective. I also agree with the perspective that it is the individual's right to choose what is the best interest of their child. But we have to deal with a public health issue here that affects 3.2 million Iowans. And I cannot ignore that fact. So I will be voting against this, but I do appreciate Senator Carlin's perspective that we do need additional input, additional thought, and this needs to be a conversation going forward.
With only one of the three senators signing these bills, they will not advance to the full Human Resources Committee. This is the weekly legislative podcast, Under the Golden Dome. I'm John Pemble. A Senate local government subcommittee is considering a bill that could determine what people don't have to do based on their religion. It's known as a Religious Freedom Restoration Act, or RFRA. Several states have a version of such a law. This is another very crowded subcommittee. Many visitors from churches are attending this one. The subcommittee is chaired by Republican Senator Dennis Guth.
I'd just like to start out, this could be a contentious sort of thing, so we just want to make sure that everybody knows that we will not tolerate applause or noise or things like that as various people are giving their presentations. I would like to, I'll open up with a few remarks and then I will go to having one person speak in favor of the bill and then one speaking opposed to the bill, alternating.
Guth says in 1993, Congress passed a Religious Freedom Restoration Act, but it was later determined by the U.S. Supreme Court it only applied to federal law and that states must pass their own versions.
What this law does is it ensures that every citizen gets a fair day in court when government intrudes on their basic freedoms. It doesn't predetermine any winners or losers. It creates fairness and balance when a citizen's constitutionally protected freedoms and government action conflict.
Brad Cranston is a pastor for the Baptist Heritage Church in Burlington. Cranston says this bill will provide two tests for courts
for determining if and when the heavy hand of government has the right to force a citizen to obey a law that they believe violates their sincerely held religious beliefs. Test one asks this question: does the government have a compelling interest meaning an interest of the highest degree, to force the citizen to violate their religious beliefs? And if so, then test two, is the government carrying out that interest in the least restrictive way?
Cranston says no American should be forced to violate their conscience without a fair court hearing. Gary Shulton is an executive vice president with Principal Financial Group. Shulton opposes this bill because he says it will not help attract or retain a diverse workforce.
And just to give you a sample of that, we have a GLBT employee resource group here in Iowa for our company. We have about 450 members. In addition to that, we have over 1,000 that are signed on as allies. So it's an important issue to our employees as well. We believe that Senate File 240 would enable discrimination by empowering business owners to deny services or accommodations based on sexual orientation or gender identity.
Jeff Ferguson, pastor of Glory Baptist Church in Carlisle, says all he is asking for is a chance to stand unhindered in court.
It is not freedom to attempt to control the opposition. This is tyranny. This is the very idea that the signers of the Declaration of Independence were opposed to when they wrote that whenever any form of government becomes destructive to these, life, liberty, pursuit of happiness, it is the right of the people to alter and to abolish it and to institute new government, laying its foundation on such principles and organizing its power in such form as to them shall seem most likely to affect their safety and happiness. This Religious Freedom Restoration Act is our safety and happiness for the future.
John Steinman from the Iowa Chamber Alliance opposes this bill because he says it allows discrimination in commerce.
And that can be a slippery slope. And that's something where we have grave concern over having how it can be interpreted or enforced for what is, in fact, a truly or bona fide religious perspective versus an act of discrimination.
But Joan Thompson from the Iowa Catholic Conference says this bill isn't a license to discriminate.
Many groups here today are probably looking at this legislation almost exclusively through the lens of LGBTQ issues, which is valid. But we would ask you to consider this issue from a different angle as well. We are particularly concerned about Iowa's law, which allows people to refuse to participate in an abortion. We are deeply concerned how that law may be interpreted in light of the recent Iowa Supreme Court's finding that abortion is now a fundamental right in the state of Iowa. This possible conflict is exactly the situation that Senate File 240 is designed to address, so physicians and others are guaranteed the opportunity to present their position in court.
Connie Ryan from the Interfaith Alliance of Iowa says the bill would allow someone to deny anyone services based on their own religious beliefs.
Someone could refuse to serve them, refuse to provide medical care, refuse to allow them to enter their establishment, refuse to let them rent an apartment, simply because of a religious exemption that they claim.
The lone Democrat on this three-member panel, Senator Rob Hoag, says to Chairman Guth, the bill puts up a not welcome in Iowa sign.
I'd urge us not to move this forward today, end this issue sooner this year than we did last year, right? I mean, it didn't go through last year. I don't think it's going to go through this year. I think you've got fewer co-sponsors this year than you had last year, even though your Republican caucus is larger. So I think the easiest thing to do is just say, let's say we've gave it the hearing that people wanted and people had their hearing, and now let's stop it. So I don't plan on signing the report today, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Guth says this bill is necessary because it will allow people to respect everyone's beliefs without coercion.
We would all like everyone else to believe the same thing that we do. But we need to make sure that we're using reason in order to persuade them, not coercion in order to force them to act according to our beliefs. It seems to me that today's diversity is beginning to sound an awful lot like yesterday's conformity. It's not just that the business world that suffers from this coercion today. Average citizens in church, in clubs, and at school are all on edge because of the power of this pressure to conform. I know of a college here in Iowa that has a very popular professor who suddenly decided to present as the opposite sex. Employees are afraid of being fired if they forget and call this person by the wrong pronoun. Even worse, they see the confused looks on the students' faces, but know that they dare not explain to them what's going on.
Senator Guth says that is an example of thought control, and it isn't the sort of thing Iowa should be about. Senate File 240 advances out of this subcommittee and is eligible for a full local government committee discussion. This is the weekly podcast about the Iowa legislature under the Golden Dome. I'm John Pimble. Some bills are starting to move out of full committee, which means chamber debates will soon increase. One bill eligible for the Senate chamber is about public assistance. It would deny food stamp benefits to parents not keeping up with child support payments. It also includes quarterly income checks for people on Medicaid. Supporters say it's about making sure taxpayer money isn't being used incorrectly. Opponents say it's an attempt to hassle people to get them to fall through the cracks and kick them off of these programs. This podcast considers many stories, but we try to make what can be a complicated political process understandable. That's why we focus on around three main stories each week. But you can hear more about the daily action from our Statehouse reporter, Katerina Sestarik. In addition to hearing her stories on our newscasts, they are also published at iowapublicradio.org. Her reporting is also very helpful to this podcast. Thanks to the press pool at the Statehouse, we often collaborate on stories and information, especially from Radio Iowa's Kay Henderson. Under the Golden Dome's ideas pass through Iowa Public Radio news director Michael Leland, and he also provides script editing. Every Friday, we put up a new show on iowapublicradio.org. If you like what you are hearing, share a link on social media. We're not yet halfway done with this session, so make sure your podcast subscription to the show is an AO and not a NAO. You can do that on iTunes, Google Play, or plenty of other podcast programs. Under the Golden Dome is a production of Iowa Public Radio.
Under the Golden Dome is supported by the Iowa Bankers Association. Bankers across Iowa are ready to help Iowans reach their financial goals to get them where they want to go. Learn about the difference of Iowa banks by following Iowa Bankers on Facebook and Twitter.